Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Joe Rex Road coming back into the fold here, as you can see on the stream. Joined now, as we are every Friday at 8 o'clock, by our man Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD as well, on our 102.5 The Game phone line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. TD, what's going on, my man? How we doing?
Hey, man, what a day to be alive, man. That's all I could say.
That's all I could say, too. That's always a good start for sure. TD, look, I don't know about you. I have had a lot of fun watching A.J. Brown this week make his various videos and his Instagram messages, TikTok videos, everything of the like, trying to recruit Julio Jones to the Titans. We know that this is probably going to happen via trade, and it's not really in Julio Jones' hands anyway. But what have you thought of A.J. Brown and his recruiting videos for Julio Jones? And what do you think about this Julio Jones saga taking place right now with the Falcons?
Yeah, man, you know, when I talk to A.J. Brown, I always tell him, like, young boy, you get it, man. You understand what it is to connect yourself to a fan base, to media, to other players. That guy really has it together, and you could tell he was raised the right way. And you never see him overreact to, like, stressful situations or anything like that. So I love what he's doing, and it's cool. But the thing that I really feel about it is, you know, he's having fun with it. That's what all the guys are doing. They're having fun with it. Because at the end of the day, Julio Jones can't go to Arthur Blank and Wayne Fontenot and tell them, hey, trade me to the Titans, right? They're going to send Julio Jones to the team that or organization that gives him the best compensation. That's really what it boils down to. So as far as when you look at this whole thing, I mean, how could you not want a guy like Julio Jones in your offense? Absolutely, you want that. But you also have to look at, and this is something that I talked to Chris Sanders about for talking with TD this week, you got to understand fit and just see how that would happen, because now you got Todd Downing already trying to maintain the continuity that they had last year, and he would have to tweak some things because Julio Jones, man, let's face it, you got that guy in your lineup, you're going to want to give him the ball a lot. And how will that fit in with Derrick Henry, who you want to give touches? We know what happens as he continues to get the football in the fourth quarter. And then A.J. Brown, he's a young dynamite player in his own right, and you got other players who are ascending too. So it's a tough situation, and then not to mention the salary cap issues. You got to push some stuff down the line, and not just enough room to fit him in the cap. You want to fit enough room in case, God forbid, an injury like 2018 with Jonathan Cyprian. They were able to go out and get Kenny Vaccaro, who obviously was a fantastic player for the few years that he was here. So there's a lot to consider with it. On paper, you know, and as a pipe dream, it's something that I know Titans fans are excited about, and they should be.
Yeah, well, and pipe dream's probably about right. Long shot. I mean, it's. I feel like there's a lot of other teams, you know, that are probably in better position to do this, TD. But
exactly.
In general, if you're you know, John Robinson, and you're in talks, because your coworker Diana Rossini, of course, reported that, you know, at least somebody out there has talked first round pick with the Falcons. What would you think would be appropriate, you know, compensation for, of course, taking on that salary? I mean, to me, the Falcons aren't in a position of strength because they are trying to unload that huge cap hit.
Exactly. And that's the thing. You got a team that wants to, it's, you know what this is like? You ever go to the boardwalk, right? And it's hot. That heat is beating down on you, and you got to cool off. So what do? Especially if wrestler, you got your son with you. What do? You're gonna spend $10 on two ice cream cones. You know what I mean? It's an impulse purchase. They got you, and that's how this situation is. So yeah, I think they're crazy if they think they're going to get a first round pick in this situation with the contract and with them really trying to unload it. And now if you have a player who's not disgruntled, but he just feels, you know, his relationship has run its course there. So that's going to be tough. Now for NFL Nation, we did a post where each of us, well, it ended up being four of us. We made a pitch for Julio Jones. I pitched a third-round pick and Rashawn Evans. And, man, I like Rashawn Evans as a player. I really do. And I feel that if he stays here, he's going to have a big year. But I just wanted to, you know, make a fair trade, nothing personal. And that's what I offered. And Michael Rothstein, the new Falcons reporter, he almost took it, but he ended up going with a second and a fourth from the 49ers. So that's my value, a third-round pick and a starter, plug and play. I think that would be what they should offer, and I would think that would get the deal done.
The great Teron Davenport on the line with us, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, Nashville's premier mobile tire company, online at freedomtireguys.com. And, TD, we saw Darrington Evans getting some work in at wide receiver. In your opinion, what do you think the next step is for him in this offense? How much more involved do you think he needs to be in the passing game as he heads into year two here?
Yeah, I think he's going to be more involved with it. And the thing, and I asked him about, I wasn't sure, so I said, let me just ask him just to double check. He did play some receiver at Appalachian State. So you're getting a guy who, God bless Derrick Henry, but if you put Derrick Henry in the slot, you know, let him run routes or anything like that, it's not going to look pretty, you know. But he is a guy, Darrington Evans, you could put him in there, and he actually looked good yesterday. Watched him through the drills, the box drills, the cones, and, you know, working with all that stuff. And I thought he was pretty impressive. And he's someone that you could go with a two running back package, right, and have Derrick Henry in the backfield and motion Evans into the slot. And now you got a matchup issue. Because I would take him against most linebackers. So that's something I think he will be involved. And the thing that you have to remember with him is he's a guy that was a home run hitter at App State. I mean, he had, three or four 70-yard touchdown runs. So that's something. And when you take Derrick Henry out of the game, you don't want to lose a whole lot of that home run ability. And that's kind of where they were without Evans as a guy, because, I mean, McNichols is solid, and I think he makes the roster, and Brian Hill is another good one, so it's going to be a competition. But those guys don't give you the home run hitting that Evans brings. So, yeah, I think he's going to be involved, and I think there's going to be a move to – I mean, they wanted it last year, right, to not give Derrick Henry the ball so many times, but it's hard to take a guy like that out. So I think if you could give him a breather, get some success with Evans, I think that will further increase his role.
TD, I know you tweeted about DeShone Kizer and how he looked throwing the football. Yeah. I mean, his arm talent really has never been in dispute, but maybe a guy who can really push Logan Woodside. What else from yesterday stood out to you? I mean, I don't think any of the veterans who weren't there surprised any of us. Anyone who did who wasn't there?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say this about Kizer. Let's get it out the way, and I'm going to give you, you know, Jarrett – Stillman, you know, and company, they like to do the Fireball Hot Take Fridays. Well, here you go. DeShone Kizer is going to be the backup quarterback.
Ooh,
I would put money on that. And there's no slight on Logan Woodside, because when he gets out there, he can make the offense move and do things. But if you look at what he does as far as Kizer's concerned, he's able to get on the move, similar to what Tannehill does, and that guy can push the ball down the field in the middle of the field, which is something that you don't really have with Woodside. You can stretch the field vertically with Kizer. And this is all under the, you know, heaven forbid Ryan Tannehill goes down with injury, right? So either way, if that should happen, you know, you're going to really probably punch some walls, because they're going to be upset. But still, I think Kizer will be the backup. Now, as far as guys who weren't there that surprised me, I mean, honestly, and I'm not knocking them, you know, I respect any player's decision not to be there, but I was very surprised that Rashawn Evans wasn't there. I was very surprised that Tannehill wasn't there. You know, I know some of the guys like Byard, he had some things that you know, were keeping him from being there. He'll be there next week. But some of the leaders on the team, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would imagine they have valid reasons to not be there. But I just was surprised by that, because this is a team, especially on defense, that was really looking to turn the corner from a leadership perspective. And I think that's one way that, you know, other guys aren't going to look at it sideways, but I just think that's one way to just really further solidify your position as a leader on the team.
TD, last thing for you here. Obviously, this is a really important year for Christian Fulton. I mean, the responsibility that he's going to have certainly elevated from what we saw this time a year ago. And obviously, in year one, dealt with a lot of injuries. What are your expectations for Christian Fulton as he heads now into year two with the Titans?
Yeah, I think the young fella is going to take a big step. And I think really it starts with him being healthy. I thought it was really funny. He said yesterday, I had an injury that I never even heard of. I thought that was pretty funny, but that just goes to show you, you know, how much experience that young man has with injuries. So I think that's the first thing. And I asked him about taking that next step, and he said another thing with him is just learning the whole defense. And that's something that, you know, especially a guy who's going to be asked to play some nickel, asked to play outside. I think you have to know what everybody else is doing when you're in the nickel, especially, because you got to know where your help inside is. You got to, know where you have to carry a certain receiver to before you can pass them off. All those things. There's a lot. And you can't play fast, if you don't know all that. And that's what he said. Knowing the whole scheme is going to allow him to be quick on his feet and make plays. And let me tell you, that dude is a solid man coverage corner. And he can play some zone. But he's good in match and man type coverage. So I think he's going to have a big year. And he's already having a big year off the field, right? He has his door of the trenches open up there in North Nashville, you know. So that's something. They got the gear there, so I'm going to keep shopping there. But yeah, man, I think it's going to be a big season for him.
Absolutely, Teron Davenport joins us every week here on Robbie and Rex Road Fridays at 8 o'clock. Always great stuff. TD, appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And hey, Rexro, the secret to my energy this morning, man, I put Bismarck, I put that tape in.
Oh, yeah.
And it got me going, man. The Bismarck is going off.
Nice. The Biz. Wait, did you say the tape? Did you actually put in the tape?
No, I didn't. You know, it was the tape. Like, you play it on your phone and it looks like the tape.
There
you go. Give you those old school vibes. You know how we do.
Oh, he's got – Rex Rowe's got big grin on his face now. He's
I had him stumped for a second when I said the tape. That's
you
why
did.
We had that silence.
Oh, yeah. He was thrown off. TD, appreciate you, brother. Have a great weekend.
I love it.
All right. Much love, fellas. Be safe this weekend.
Absolutely. You as well. Teron Davenport, the great reporter for ESPN NFL Nation, also hosts Talking with TD as well, joins us every week, presented by Freedom Tire Guys, Nashville's premier mobile tire company, online at freedomtireguys.com. We'll react a little bit to what TD had to say. Get your back into your thoughts on the Predators as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD, on with us here in the last segment. Making a bold prediction here on this Call Your Shot Friday that DeShone Kizer will end up being the backup quarterback for the Tennessee Titans, not Logan Woodside, as they head into this 2021 season. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, what do you think of those comments there made by our man Teron Davenport that DeShone Kizer going to be the one then ends up being the backup quarterback for the Titans, not Logan Woodside?
Well, first of all, I just hope TD was listening there as Elijah came in with some Tribe Called Quest.
Yes.
That would be some awesome tapes that I used to have, some actual cassette tapes. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked by that. I mean, Kizer was an interesting case. Obviously, all kinds of expectations and opportunity for the worst team in football and sort of cast aside and forgotten about. But I don't think anybody's ever questioned his talent. He's hanging in there. I'm sure he's matured and gotten better. And, he's in this situation of just trying to stay in this league, carve out a role. And I don't think there's any doubt that he is a more talented player than Woodside. The Titans like Woodside. They have liked him. Clearly, Woodside's gotten a lot better, but I mean, I would right now say that's going to be a definite battle to watch. I think it's going to be a battle in camp. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if TD ends up being right on that.
Well, I think the point he brings up about, you know, stretching the field vertically and the big arm that Kizer brings to the table, that's one worth considering. Now, look, I don't know what Logan Woodside's limitations are in terms of his arm strength down the field. And hopefully, if you're the Titans, you don't really ever have to find out, because that means that Tannehill stays healthy like he's been able to the last couple of years. But we did have some people heading into this offseason talk about the backup quarterback position. Is that something that you're comfortable with if you're the Titans? Look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that, oh, I'm absolutely comfortable with DeShone Kizer being able to come in and win a game if Tannehill goes down and the Titans need it. But I do think, you know, when that move was made last year and he was brought into the organization, that got lost in the shuffle a little bit, kind of thrown by the wayside. And I'm interested to see how much of a competition he can make it this year with Logan Woodside at training camp, because as we know in this league, you're one hit away from your backup quarterback having to go in there and play significant snaps for you. Again, hopefully that's not the case for the Titans, but I do wonder of those two, which one the Titans feel like gives them the best chance to win if they need to come in and play.
Yeah, the Titans are like most of the rest of the league. If they lose their starting quarterback, they're in big trouble.
Yes.
It's a situation of kind of like, you know, like Blaine Gabbert. You know, can you get one win here or there? You know, if your starter's missing 2-3 weeks and maybe you got a weaker opponent, can you get enough to try to get it, you know, to get a win there in a tough spot? I agree that Kizer just sort of went under the radar. There was so much made of Trevor Siemian, but that's because that was in camp. And we all assumed when they said Trevor Siemian, well, sorry, Logan Woodside, carry on. And I mean, I remember on the show last, you know, in August, like the first day, being like, nah, I mean, Woodside was a lot better than Siemian. Well, we'll see. Maybe it'll change. It never did. That's not what it looks like now. So, look, this is always a good thing if you're a club, if you can have genuine competition. Not that Logan Woodside wasn't going to work and put in extra time and film and all that stuff, but if you got anybody in a battle at a position in this league, it usually elevates the performance. And so I think that's, you know, something to watch. It's neither option, as you said, is going to be this great solution, but it's what the league is for the most part. And this team is not in any position to go pay someone. They don't have a kicker yet.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
For example, they don't have a starting tight end yet, for example.
Exactly. I mean, those are just positions that are obviously way more important than the backup quarterback. So money, very short to throw around this year for John Robinson and the Titans. We're going to be joined here in just a few minutes by Terry Criss, Predators TV analyst, to break down the loss last night for the Predators in Game 6. Joe, we'll get to Crispy's thoughts coming up here in just a few minutes, but just quickly, I thought it was a case where the Predators in the first 30 minutes of that game played just about as well as you could have hoped for. I thought they had the Canes exactly where they wanted them. And to me, I mean, we're going to talk a lot today and have talked a lot today about the third period and how dominant that was for Carolina. But that goal in the second on the power play by Carolina to make it 3-2 and to be within one heading into the third, after I thought the Predators played extremely well to open up that second period, to me, that's the goal I look back on and say, oh, if you could have just gotten out of that second period up 3-1, who knows what could have happened as you go down the stretch there. A tough way to lose last night for the Predators in overtime, and a tough way for the season to come to an end, even though I think they showed better in this series than most people expected that they would.
Yeah, absolutely they did. You know, the big mistakes last night were made by two guys who I'm very confident are going to be part of things moving forward. You know, obviously Ekholm, and it's just he was, you know, so close to getting that thing cleared. That would have done it for that power play. You know, the penalty kill unit really was terrific in that sequence. And under, you know, the execution the Canes can put on you with that power play is special at times. So that mistake, and then obviously Trennan, the almost hero of Game 5 with his two goals. You know, he ices a puck so close to being over the red line, and then obviously he misses his assignment right off that next faceoff with that exhausted group having to go back to a defensive zone faceoff. And, you know, that's one of those things for him. It's one of those, I mean, John Hines talked about, that's why that focus and all that stuff in those key moments, that's why it's so important. And for a young guy like that, that's invaluable experience.
Listen to The Game every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. It's The Game's 1K payday presented by Kentucky Kingdom and Hurricane Bay. Listen for keywords at 9, at noon, and at 3 o'clock. And when you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com and enter the keyword for a shot at $1,000. When we come back, we'll be joined by the legendary Terry Criss, Predators TV analyst, getting his thoughts on the series for the Predators and what to do as they move forward ahead here in the offseason as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And you hear that music? You know what it means. It's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend, Predators TV analyst, Terry Criss. Crispy, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. We're fine. We're up. It's a little dull day out there, just sort of a aftertaste of last night's ending of the game. But again, we're up on the right side of the green, so hey, turn it up and keep going.
That's right. That's always a great place to be, Crispy. So we'll start there. Just your thoughts on Game 6 last night for the Predators. You get out to a 3-1 lead, got a lot of chances to score in the second period, and then Carolina fights and claws their way back into it and wins it in overtime. What were your takeaways from the game last night for the Preds?
You know what? They did the same thing the fifth and sixth game were ours. We worked hard. I have to give the guys full marks for that. I mean, they come out, we come out flying. But we knew, and you know all along, that Carolina is one of the top teams, one of the best, and they don't quit. They keep coming at you and at you. And I was listening to you guys a little earlier, and you're right. Just a few little things have turned the tide on them, like the one power play goal at the end of the second there, I believe it was. If we get through that one, I think it's a different story. Probably it should be. The guy's working. But and then once Carolina got that one, and then when they tied it up, then you knew that it was going to be, the pushback was hard. And we didn't, in the third period, they didn't let us. I mean, we didn't have the pushback. It looked like we were running out of gas. They got stronger in the third period. We were on fumes. And no excuses, no nothing. We played our hearts out as far as we could, except that we just didn't have it in that last period. And the guys were trying, and Carolina just slammed the door on us. I mean, I've coached and played before where teams just, they just steamroll you. And once they got us steamrolling in the third and wouldn't let out, I mean, when you, the one stat that stood out to me in the third period was that we only had, I think somebody put out 41 seconds of offensive zone puck possession in the third period. And if that stat is anywhere near right, that tells you the whole story of the third period and the Carolina Hurricanes, how they just swamped us in the third period and didn't let us in.
Yeah, Crispy, I actually wanted to ask you about the third period. You know, Ryan Johansson last night, you know, said, you know, credit to Carolina, but also maybe too much sitting back, you know, for the Preds. I know that's tough. When you're trying to protect the lead, you've got such a dangerous opponent, and you don't want to give up anything easy. But what is the balance there of sort of, you know, being mindful, but also still trying to be aggressive and get that tack on goal that puts you over the top?
No, you know what? I don't buy that theory. As a coach, I look at my team and how they played and what they did and how we got the lead. And how do we get the lead in the fifth and sixth game? We are aggressive. We are in attack mode. We went after them. We didn't respect them. We went right down their throats and kept doing it, and kept going after them. And at the end, they could outlast us and did it. But you don't play not to lose. And if you start, and once you get on your heels and start playing, well, we got to protect this. We can't get a guy caught deep. Then you're playing against yourself, and you're playing right into their hands. And I thought in the third period last night, once they got going, we just tried to put up a blockade. You can't blockade their power play. You can't blockade the attack unless you're attacking, unless you've got the puck, unless you're in their zone. And in the third period last night, that's exactly what happened. Once they got it rolling and we got back on our heels, the phrase that Coach Hines uses all the time is pushback. We had no pushback against them. And to me, in a thumbnail, that was the game right there in the third period.
Predators TV analyst Terry Crisp on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Crispy, with all that in mind, it's over with in six games against Carolina. We know how good Carolina is. I'm really interested to see how this series shakes out between Carolina and Tampa Bay. But as you look back at this season for the Predators and factor in the entire picture, how much of a struggle it was for the first half of the season, the run to get into the playoffs, and now this series against Carolina, what stands out to you about this season for the Predators? I mean, what are kind of your thoughts as you put the season in the rearview mirror now, if you're David Poile?
You know what? I look at this season as a roller coaster ride that started out saying, what is going on? Took off, up and down. But I look at it with, if I'm coaching and or playing, I look at it with pride. Because when we started after a bad, dismal ending last year and the COVID and the whole, everybody went through this. But we had eight new guys coming into our lineup. We had all the kids coming up from the minors. And I think that it took a while. I know it did. It took a while for the coaching staff to get together, maybe to know each other, because they didn't have a time to work together. So I look at all of the little pieces that were out there sort of floating around in space, and how the Coach Hines and the staff finally brought the pieces bit by bit like a puzzle together. And then on March the 15th, when that puzzle hit and they took off, I'm proud of them. I mean, I'm as proud as I can be, because these kids played their heart out. I mean, the veterans we had injuries. Veterans went down, and I can't say enough about the kids that came up from the minors and stepped into the gap and just kept this team going. And when you look back on it, it was each lines took turns of stepping up per game and making it happen. One line would lead it, then another line, then another bunch, and then the defense corps would take over. And you know, and I'm no excuses, none whatsoever this year. I'm proud of the guys, the way they played, how they got to where they – people said we're not supposed to be there. I don't know why they said that. I mean, if you have enough pride in yourself and work hard enough, you should be there. And I used that phrase before. We earned the right to be in the fight when playoffs started. Everybody said, well, we should be there. Yeah, we earned the right to be there, and we did. So looking back on the whole season, I like the job the coaches did tremendously, what they did for it. I love the additions that we did. And I got to tell you one thing. The story to me is Sorrows. That young man, our goaltender, played un-friggin' believable this year down the stretch in the playoffs.
Crispy, understanding that obviously we don't know exactly what things are going to look like next year, who's coming back, who's going, there's trades, there's the crack and all this stuff. But just looking at this group of players, if you could pick one player right now to say, you know, have the best possible and come back with that player's best possible game, and that would lift the team, who would that player be?
You know, I thought about that in the last few games as to who was the one guy that continued through all of this besides Saros. Saros is the man. I don't care. And Pekka has got to be there with him for another little while, because he's his mentor and he is the guy that does it. I'd love to see that for another year or so also. But after Saros, the names that should jump up to you are like the ones that've been here so long. But you have to throw Captain Josi into the mix in that one there. But I tell you, I like Granlund's game. I mean, I got to be honest. When we let Granlund become a free agent and went back, and when David Poile signed him, I thought, that's an interesting sign. And then as the year went on, I thought, wow. What a great move that was, because I mean, he showed us what type of player he was, and Granlund, and then you know, and then guys started to catch up, like Cunning and Cousin and Sissons and these guys. But if you said if I could take one, it might be consistently for what he did and how he did it was Granlund.
Predators TV analyst Terry Crisp has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joins us every Friday here on Robbie and Rex Road at 8:30. Crispy, great stuff. We appreciate you taking time to join us and appreciate your time and your perspective all season long, my friend.
Hey, guys.
Hold on. Wait. Hold on. Don't go, Crispy. I've been told this is a special day for Terry Crisp.
Uh-oh.
How about a big happy birthday to Terry Crisp,
happy
huh?
Happy birthday, Crispy.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Like I said to my wife, not this morning, I said, you know, it's just great to be here with you, hon, to celebrate another one. And everyone is a blessing. So thank you very much for that. And while I'm on the vein, thank you guys. It's always been fun. You guys right, wrong, indifferent. You love the game. You guys have passion for the game, and you brought it every time out for our sport. So I want to thank you too, fellas. And just this, you and all your families, please stay safe and stay healthy.
Absolutely. You as well, Crispy. We'll talk to you coming up down the road as well.
Thanks, fellas.
Absolutely. Terry Crisp, the legendary voice of the Nashville Predators television analyst, Terry Crisp, joins us every Friday at 8:30. Crispy, one of the best in the business. When we come back, we'll continue to react to the Predators, their loss last night in Game 6, eliminated from the playoffs. What did we take away from the Predators in this series against Carolina? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Predators forward Ryan Johansson after the game last night. The Predators eliminated with a 4-3 overtime loss against Carolina. Joe, what did you think of those comments there to lead off that answer there from Johansson, saying the Predators are close, they're really close, and what did you think of his lines play last night in Game 6? We talked about it, the importance of Johansson, Duchesne, and Forsberg as a trio heading into Game 6. What did you think of the performance of that line last night in an elimination game for the Predators?
Yeah, I just didn't think it was good enough. They had some moments. They had, they were a threat at times. They made some pushes at times, but I think you wanted a little bit more from them. And some of the evaluation of these things, it gets changed by the third period, right? Because I would say through two periods, those guys, like, you could look at every line and find really good moments and just a collective, really overwhelming. Oh, maybe overwhelming is a little bit much, but a very strong and clearly superior 5-on-5 play from the Preds in two periods. I guess the whole crew, in the third period, it went away. And there was, to me, like what Chris was just saying last segment, I think that's what we saw. Now, I don't know if that's, Hines dictating that, or that's just mindset on the ice from these guys. I mean, it's, you got to lead, you want to Carroll. It could look too much like they were on their heels, and Carolina is going to get you if you play like that, and they did. But overall, that line, I just didn't think was good enough. I didn't think it was good enough in the series. I thought there were certainly some big moments. I mean, Johansson still had Preds forwards and goals in this series.
Yeah.
He tapped home a 5-on-3 great pass from Roman Josi. Good for him. Still left wanting more.
Still left wanting more. And look, it's interesting to kind of get the perspective of Predators fans today on this series and just how close you think the Predators are. I mean, look, we know this. We knew this heading in. I had Carolina in 6 before the series began, and we knew that they're a really good team. I mean, they are among the handful of teams in the NHL that I would consider legitimate Stanley Cup contenders. And Carolina did nothing in this series that convinces me that they're not going to be right there. This is going to be a heck of a series that they have coming up against Tampa Bay. The question is, if you're the Predators, what do you take away from a series like this where you've got 4 consecutive games that go into overtime? It's the third time in the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs that 4 games in a row have gone at least into overtime here. So, I mean, that tells you right there. You're right there in this series. You're competitive. We've talked about it in Game 5. The game's right there for the taking if you're the Predators. You had your opportunities to win that game, and Marty Nagy just makes a huge play. Carolina wins in overtime. Yesterday, you're up 3-1. I mean, it's the first time all series long that you had a multi-goal lead in this series. You're right there, and then all of a sudden the power play goal, it's 3-2 heading into the third. And you just, to me, it boils down to this. I felt like there were certain times in this series that Carolina could just elevate their game to a level that the Predators just couldn't get to. I mean, I think Carolina at their peak, and I think we saw Carolina pretty close to their peak in that third period last night against the Predators. I think right now that's a level that the Predators just can't get to. And the question is, how close are they to being able to get to that level? I think you could ask, 10 different Predators fans that question, and 5 may be on one side, 5 may be on the other side as well. And that's the challenge now for David Poile as they move into this offseason. How close are you really to being a Stanley Cup contender? And I think that's going to require some honesty from this group and from this front office this offseason. I think what would be really easy to do right now if you're the Predators is to just say, all right, well, we won 20 out of 28 games to close out the regular season. We found our franchise goaltender. We feel great about him heading into next year, and there are some very good young pieces that you feel good about. There's not much that needs to happen to this roster. Let's just throw this thing back out there again and see what happens. I'm not saying that that absolutely wouldn't work, but I think that's a dangerous game to play when you win 20 of 28 coming down the stretch and your goaltender's operating at like a 940 save percentage. Like, I think there's got to be some realism as well as you look at this offseason, and I do think there are some changes that need to be made to this core group as they head into this offseason.
I do too. You know, but what may happen is things are explored to seriously change the core group. They don't happen. And so that's what you're left with. And you say, well, hopefully, you know, 27-1 and taking the Canes, you know, to four straight overtime games and really outplaying them for stretches, for pretty significant stretches, means that's what's moving forward. But I would tend to agree that, you know, it's the puzzle is not complete. And again, it's at the top. It's, you know, what do your top six look like? How do they match up with other top teams around the league? You know, the Canes are an example of a team. You know, they don't have that one superstar. They've got a lot of really good players. And really, a lot more guys who I think stepped up to what they are supposed to be in this series. Aho stepped up. You know, Stahl was magnificent in this series. Obviously, you know, Sleep, I mean, when he was on the ice, I mean, it's a huge. But it is like, I mean, you can take the approach that, okay, well, this team from mid-March on was not a four-seed team. This is one of the best teams in the league. But I think the best counter-argument is what you just said. Soros, yes, they found Soros. I feel confident Soros is going to be the starter, and he's going to be a very good starter in this league. But can he play like this all the time? I think you're asking for too much there. You have to have more at the very top of your forward roster to be a contender in this league.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Shane from Ashland City texting in saying, I don't understand your concept. We all have no reason to think I want to see more where we were expecting to lose in five. And quite frankly, that series should have gone to seven. We are just as old as the Canes. When we were all expecting to be huge underdogs, the odds were plus 120 last night. Come on. I hear you. But it's not just this series that we're talking about. This is the overall picture of this franchise. How close are you to being a Stanley Cup contender? And Joe, you bring up a good point there. Part of the answer to that is, what is the top of your lineup going to look like? What is your forward group going to bring to the table? And right now, there's just no way you can convince me this team is close to being a Stanley Cup contender if you're not going to get more out of your top two centermen. I mean, you just can't win that way. You cannot win without getting more out of your top two centermen. Ryan Johansson's got to be better. Matt Duchene has got to be better. If they're not, number one, you need to move on from one of them if you can. If not, like, it's just hard to win that way. So I hear what Shane's saying there. It was a heck of a series from the Predators. But when you're evaluating the overall picture here, if they're not going to be any better than they've been the last couple of years, it's very difficult to compete that way. That's just the bottom line when it comes to this discussion.
I'll go to Adam in Portland on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You guys are too critical of them. You get paid to be critical, so I get it. But I thought the top line played really well. Didn't score much, but the team altogether played their butts off. I couldn't be more proud of them and more along those lines. I mean, these two comments, and then let's go back to Ben. Yeah, it's just, look, I mean, both sides of that argument, I mean, you're not going to convince each other, right? I mean, there's people who are like, this is why they should have sold everything, move it all. Fire people, you know, trade people. This is not it. And then some people are like, hey, I'm proud of this team, and I don't think they're that far away. I think it's, for me, it's hard to tell me, even though they improved so much. I mean, John Hines said it himself, like, they got to reach a higher level. To him, he's taking his players, and they're going to try to keep trying to find those little things in games that obviously meant a lot to them, but I don't think they reached the higher level with the roster as constructed unless the guys we constantly talk about flip the switch next year.
Well, yeah. I mean, but
if they're here.
Yeah, if they're here. And at this point, I mean, look, let's be honest here. We're 2 years into this discussion. I mean, Ryan Johansson has not been the same player for the last 2 years. I thought he was fine in this playoff series, but there's got to be more there. Matt Duchene has not lived up to expectations here for 2 years. This is a pretty large sample size at this point. So, look, I have a hard time believing they're just all of a sudden going to turn it around. I think there's talent there. I like a lot of the buttons that John Hines has pushed with this group, but one of the buttons that he's not really been able to figure out is Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. And that's a big problem as you move forward here. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025 The Game and T-Mobile have partnered up to give you a chance to experience a Nashville SC game this season. Tune in every Monday to Darren Donick and Chase for the keyword to text in to win. Good luck from 1025 The Game, T-Mobile, and Nashville SC. And speaking of Nashville SC, later this morning, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Sunday night, you win a prize pack and a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. We'll have that opportunity coming up for you later this morning at 9:45. This is Robbie and Rexrode, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.